It's time to get the local view. Kind of a miserable day. Good for Austin. He's getting on a plane heading to L.A., covering the Ducks. You can find his work on the front page of the Register Guard. Become a follower on Twitter. Use the handle at Austin Meek RG. Welcome in our Tuesday table setter. Austin Meek, how's it going?
Hey, Steve. As you can probably tell, a little bit under the weather today, but yeah. Hoping it's nothing that a little California sunshine will not cure.
Yeah, I very rarely use the J word, but bring a really big suitcase. I would like to sneak in it.
I'm not sure I can get that through TSA.
And it's definitely,
I can try.
And I definitely wouldn't be able to fit my golf clubs in it, so forget it. You just go and have a good time. today's paper, you wrote about the passing of Dick Brown, known to locals, wired into track and field. I've got to be honest, I racked my brain, not sure who he was. A very infamous moment happened at the 84 Olympics in L.A. featuring Mary Slaney's Zola Budd. So what was his connection and perhaps ill-fated advice to the one-time champion distance runner on that day?
Yeah, so Dick Brown, longtime track and field coach in Eugene, passed away over the weekend. Probably best known for coaching Mary Decker Slaney, kind of in her prime. And so he was her coach in 1983 when she won gold in the 1500 and the 3000 at the World Championships. And then he was her coach a year later in 84 in that famous, infamous, I guess, 3,000-meter final. And as the story has been recounted, you know, I took a lot of this from Kenny Moore's book, reading that and other sources, but I guess as the story has been recounted, you know, Mary Slaney was used to running from in front and didn't have a lot of experience running with the pack, and she'd been coming off an injury, so I think maybe as a way to conserve energy, the plan for her in that race was, if somebody wants to run with you in front, go ahead and let them. And so she ended up in more of a pack and then didn't have a lot of experience running that way and got tangled up with another runner and then had that that tragic fall that that people all remember. So that was one thing people remember about Dick Brown, I guess, but certainly he contributed in a lot of other areas too in track and field.
So what you wrote yesterday was kind of deep. Matt Ginsburg, three-point evaluation system, Sports Tech LLC. I guess we needed the LLC in there in case we were filing with the IRS. But before we move on, what exactly is it he's doing? And I guess I thought it was interesting how the tools of his trade work.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He lives here in Eugene, and he has a PhD from Oxford. He's an astrophysicist and an entrepreneur, and he's got some other businesses. But this venture is something he came up with where he basically has two cameras set up in the basketball arena, and then he's got this super complicated formula that he came up with. And so basically he triangulates the trajectory of a shot mid-flight and runs it through this equation that will say whether the shot is going in the basket or not. And then he's got two lights set up, and so if the shot's going in, the green light flashes, and if it's going to miss, the red light flashes. And so, you know, the application of this, you have to sort of look pretty deep to see it, but he was telling me that there's a possibility that the NBA could adopt this as a way to evaluate goaltending calls. You can tell if the ball was actually on its way down or not.
Wow.
And, you know, rebounding drills, guys can sort of learn to read the flight of the ball and know whether it's going in or how it's going to bounce, and so you can position yourself for a rebound. So kind of the applications of it. But, yeah, it's an interesting guy and an interesting idea.
Now, according to his analytics, the Ducks, I guess, slipping as far as defending the three-pointer, you know, in this day and age, the way the game's played, that sounds actually like something that can bite them at a bad time. So what do his numbers say about Oregon, I guess, struggling in that area? And what does Dana Altman think about all this?
Yeah, so I'll make the distinction that, you know, what he's doing is basically just, you know, tracking these shots and, you know, creating this prediction system to determine, you know, whether the ball's going in. So he's not necessarily the one crunching the numbers to say, okay, how, you know, how's Oregon playing defense or anything. But the, you know, if you zoom out a little bit and look at the trends, you know, there have been a lot of green lights flashing for teams shooting three-pointers against Oregon. That's been something that, you know, it bit them in that trip to the Bay Area a couple weeks ago. And Dana Altman said a couple times he's not real pleased with Oregon's perimeter defense. So, you know, it's something that has been a little bit of an issue for them. And, I don't know that it's like a fatal flaw or it's something to panic about. But if you're looking at your bracket and Oregon's matched up against a team that loves to shoot three-pointers, you can look at the fact that in Pac-12 play, teams are shooting 39% from three against Oregon. It's the highest percentage in the league, and it's, you know, it's a number that I think is a little bit of cause for concern, maybe a little bit of a red flag.
I guess it's also kind of a new twist on the old game, red light, green light.
Yeah, exactly.
On Sunday, the men's team held senior day ceremonies, and I guess not taking part with a glimmer of hope, Chris Boucher, who's petitioning for another year, he's just been an amazing surprise. So, like you wrote about, from a strict NCAA rules point of view, why was he deemed a senior entering this year, and why is it you're saying it'd be the right thing to do and just award him another year based on other cases?
This was an NCAA rule that I honestly was not aware of until I looked into Chris's situation. But the rules say once you graduate from high school, you basically have a year to do whatever you want. You can go to prep school. You can take a year off. You can do whatever. But after that 1 year, you have to be enrolled in college, or else any organized sports you play will count against your eligibility. I guess the purpose of the rule is so guys don't go play on a club team for 5 years, and then, you know, you've got these muscular, mature, physically developed 25-year-old studs coming into college basketball playing against 17- and 18-year-old freshmen.
Huh. So
that's the purpose
okay.
of the rule, which I guess makes sense. But with Chris Boucher, it wasn't like that at all. For one thing, the fact that he went to high school in Canada adds a little bit of complexity to it, because he actually didn't go to the 12th grade. The system is set up differently there. So after he finished his 11th grade year, he didn't have the grades to go on and do anything else. So the NCAA ruled that 11th grade was basically his high school graduation.
Okay.
And then he had a year off where he didn't play, he didn't go to school, he was basically working to support his family. And then he ended up at a prep school the year after that, and so the reason they classified him as a senior this year is because of that prep school year, they started his eligibility clock. So for me, looking at it, I think it's pretty clear-cut that this is a case where, you know, the thing you're trying to discourage with the rule does not apply here.
I see.
This is just a guy who had some pretty unusual circumstances, and so I think it makes sense for the NCAA to give him another year, but whether the NCAA does the common sense thing, as you know, is kind of hit or miss.
Yeah, we're not going to take anything for granted there. We're talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. We've discussed it many times. You got a chance to cover Kansas hoops. And, of course, we're supposed to be in the age of parity. I mentioned yesterday, if you take the top 10 teams, they average 5 losses each, which is a really high number. And you always hear how wide open things are. So when you look at the Jayhawks winning 12 straight regular season Big 12 titles, topped only by Wooden's dynasty at UCLA. What kind of accomplishment is that?
I think it's one of the more amazing streaks in sports, at least, you know, in the last few decades. For one team in this day and age, like you say, with a lot of parity, and, you know, for one team to dominate a conference like that is pretty amazing. Everybody tries now. It's not like, you know, you've got a handful of schools that really put money into facilities and coaching salaries and recruiting. You know, by and large, if you're in a major conference, everybody's trying to be good. You know, there's been some discussion today. I've been seeing it on Twitter. You know, one of the factors in KU winning all those titles in a row was back when the Big 12 actually had 12 teams, they had two divisions, and they played an unbalanced schedule. And for some of those early years in that streak of 12, KU was playing a lot of games against Nebraska and K-State and Colorado and teams that weren't very good.
Right.
So maybe that was a factor early on, but now that they got 10 teams in that league, everybody plays everybody, and it's a really good league top to bottom, and the fact that KU's been able to continue to dominate it every year is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people felt like, well, that's all well and good, but now this year with the caliber of that conference, this is all going to come tumbling down. Turns out, not so much. All right, all week long, final thought, I've been obsessing as people react to Steph Curry. Obviously, you're too young to play the back-in-my-day game, but from Kareem, Phil Jackson, Oscar Robertson, they knock a guy who, from my chair, is just adding to the brilliance of the game that made them who they are. So is this just bitter old men, jealousy, desperate to remain relevant? What do you make of, I'm calling them the Grumposauruses.
That's funny. Well, you know, I think there's a natural tendency, especially among the older generation, to guard against overreacting to anything we see now. You know, you don't want to be the guy who what you saw 5 minutes ago is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
And you forget what happened 15 minutes ago. You know, so nobody wants to be that guy. But with Steph Curry, I don't know how, you know, I don't know how else to look at it. I mean, any statistical measure of what he's doing or just the simple eye test of watching him play, I don't know that there's ever been anybody who does it quite like him. He's just such an amazing player to watch. Hey, I didn't watch Pete Maravich in his prime. I don't know. Maybe there were guys back then that did something similar to Steph Curry, but he's just so different than anybody now in the game. He's just on a level of his own. Somebody made a great point the other day I saw. You know, Steph Curry is more beloved by fans of other teams than any other player in sports, and I think that's totally correct.
It doesn't matter
who your team is. Everybody's a Steph Curry fan because he's so much fun to watch, and those guys are pretty rare. I'm not sure I can think of another guy in any sport who's been so universally beloved by sports fans of any team than Steph Curry.
Well, I saw my first game at Madison Square Garden in 1968. I saw every one of those guys. I've never seen anything like this kid. He's like my favorite player ever. Those people are nuts. All right. you travel safe to SoCal and bring some sun back. And always fun talking with you, Austin. Take it easy.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Take it easy.